Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, September 26th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Political talks between President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party and several others have gripped Zimbabweans, as the leaking of such dialogue has been the norm over the years in Zimbabwe.
The reason why things are leaked is that people will be anxious to know. And where information is not given, people tend to start rumors.
An organization fighting for the sexual rights of Zimbabweans says most women are still being culturally oppressed by men.
One thing that is in common is that people believe that a woman must not enjoy sex. They think women have no right to initiate sex.
And tonight on the Women's Forum, we are speaking to a Zimbabwean who has just been hired by the African Development Bank. These stories and much, much more coming up. Political talks between President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party and several others have gripped Zimbabweans, as the leaking of such dialogue has been the norm over the years in Zimbabwe. Talks between the Rhodesian colonial rulers and then liberation fighters in the late 1970s were leaked to the public in Britain by some people who were taking part in the political process to grant Zimbabwe its independence. This also happened when ZANU-PF and PF-ZAPU were engaged in unity talks. The same happened to the ZANU-PF MTC talks that led to the formation of a unity government in 2009. Now the leaking continues as ZANU-PF engages the MTC formations in a new round of talks designed to normalize the social, economic and political situation in the country. What leads to the leaking of such talks and who normally does it? We pose these questions to ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu and political analyst Mlamuli Komo. Ndlovu tells Studio 7 at times is strategic to leak secret talks to members of the public.
Confidentiality is very necessary. And at times it is very necessary, again, to let members know what is happening. The reason why things are leaked is that people will be anxious to know. And where information is not given, people tend to start rumors and at the same time tend to approach certain individuals who are discussing to leak information, because there will be no formal means and ways of ensuring that the general public or what I call our core stakeholders are aware of what is happening. So the grapevine information comes from the fact that people be starved of information.
So, Mr. Nkomo, we still remember the Lancaster House talks, then there were the ZAPU-ZANU-PF talks, then the MTC-ZANU-PF talks. All those were leaked. Why does it happen that way?
People might leak information because they don't want the talks to succeed. So by leaking out information, they want to kill the talks. They are not interested in the talks that are pulling through. The other reason is to maybe gauge the mood of the public or the mood of their members. As you are saying, some of the time, these talks are secret talks between high-level party officials. Sometimes, occasionally, leaks are strategic, so that the negotiators have a kind of some feedback as to what the party members or what citizens are feeling about an issue. So the leaks might be a deliberate attempt to sabotage the talk, or there might be strategic leaks to gauge the mood.
Let's talk about these ZANU-PF MTC talks that we are told are going on. Why were they leaked?
There are quite a number of people involved in the talk. There might be people involved in the talk, and those left out might be interested in knowing, and some might be trying to put spanners to those talks and ensure that people start discussing those issues.
Mr. Nkomo, some members of the ZANU-PF party are saying nothing is happening. Why do people deny that such things are going on?
It is to be expected of ZANU-PF to deny everything. I mean, ZANU-PF is not really an open party. Most of the things these days we are told about one center of power. So there is no culture of debate. There is no culture of exchanging views in ZANU-PF. Mainly, the command comes from the top and is given downwards. With a party that is not very democratic, it is expected that you can get what you're getting now.
Is that true, Mr. Ndlovu? Can you react to that?
No, I won't say it's true, per se. The reason why people at times deny that there are talks going on is that they will be not be given the authority to speak. When you are not a spokesperson of an organization, it is very improper for you to start divulging information of which you are not supposed to be divulging. So when you know that there is confidentiality and people can ask you about things which are happening, the best answer for you to answer, especially when it comes from the press, is to tell them that nothing is happening. Because once you mention that there might be something happening, people then, especially the press, tend to inquire much more about what is happening. Hence, people tend to say nothing is happening.
Yes, we hear that. But at the end of the day, Mr. Nkomo, do you think that if ever there are some of these talks, are they going to be beneficial to the country?
From where we are coming from, we don't think so. Remember, before the GNU, there were similar talks, but they were not secret talks. They were being brokered by President Thabo Mbeki of South Africa. And we know what actually went in there. We saw a government of national unity, of which different parties, ZANU-PF, took the opportunity of the government of national unity to re-strategize and re-energize its machinery to make sure that it pushes out the opposition for good. So for this time around, for the talks to succeed, because my understanding of the talks is for people to work together. I don't foresee a situation whereby ZANU-PF will willingly give up their overwhelming majority in parliament to work with the opposition.
Mr. Ndlovu, perhaps you can respond to this, because the economy is a problem right now. So are these talks going to solve anything in terms of rescuing the economy from sliding further, you know?
No, you see, like I'm saying, okay, talks. I'm not aware about the talks. And for me to say there'll be talks or there are talks going on to solve the economy from where it is to be lying, because I don't even know that there are talks going on. All I know as yet, of course, politicians talking about talks and people denying that there will be government of national unity. For the first time, the hint I got was from the president of MTC, Mr. Morgan Tsvangirai, when he said there will be no government of national unity. Now, as if someone had said there will be a government of national unity. So what I know is that as Zimbabweans, if there is a need to talk, to correct certain things or to put forward ideas from any quarters, I'm sure those ideas will be welcome.
That was David Ndlovu, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7. You also heard Mlamuli Nkomo, an independent political analyst, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA. An organization fighting for the sexual rights of Zimbabweans says most women are still being culturally oppressed by men. Mojalife Mokwele of the Sexual Rights Center tells Studio 7 they've struggled for a long time to change local people's perceptions on these rights, especially those that normally affect women.
The Sexual Rights Center actually was formed in 2007 with the mandate of advocating and campaigning for the discourse around uplifting and protecting sexual rights in Zimbabwe. So it has been not an easy road.
So now, what have been the major hurdles in terms of, getting to meet your goals?
To be honest, the issue around sex and sexuality is a topic that many people in Zimbabwe are still not comfortable discussing or in talking about. It is from the rooted back to where we come from, the background. Even in our homes, we don't sit down to discuss sex or sexuality matters as a family. So as a country, we find that we take such a perspective out to our work and to the communities where we socialize.
So now, in terms of their fears, what has been the outcome of most of the meetings?
When we talk about sex, people already think Zimbabwe is a Christian nation. We cannot be talking about these things. People also fear upbringing in general. These are issues they have not been talking about growing up. So now, why talk about them in 2016? One thing that is common is that people believe that a woman must not enjoy sex, or a woman has no right to actually enjoy sex. They think women have no right to initiate sex, because culturally a woman cannot do that. Men are the ones who should initiate sex. Women are the ones who should actually enjoy sex. So when we come as an organization and say women also have the right to enjoy sex, people think, what are you talking about? Not in this world, because it's uncultural for what you're trying to teach this or that. But mainly we're talking about rights issues where we are all equal in terms of rights. And if men have the right to enjoy sex, so women also have the same equal rights. This is new times where we're living in, the millennium where we're talking about equality, equal rights for everyone. And we advocate for equal treatment for all people. So that we prevent issues around violence perpetrated against women or perpetrated against people based on their gender, perceived or not.
Now, that's very interesting. So when it comes to some of these cultural issues, do you think that you have actually changed people's attitudes towards that kind of negativity?
What we are realizing is that we are not, as much as we are doing most of the work on the ground, we are not working alone. There are other players in this work that we are doing. The new media is coming full force, bringing a lot of unknown information that people did not have. And we find that people are learning not only from organizations, but from Facebook, from you know, you Google things up, you get more information. So there is the new media that is also playing a role.
That was Mojalife Mokwele of the Sexual Rights Center speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
South Sudan, the world's newest country and one of its least developed, faces many humanitarian challenges. Today, it suffers in the world's worst food security crisis, one caused primarily by man-made violence. More than two decades of North-South conflict, followed by factional fighting that erupted almost 2 years ago, have further weakened an already fragile nation and undermine its ability to protect and feed its people. The South Sudanese conflict has been particularly difficult on the civilian population. Thousands of people have been killed and more than 2.2 million driven from their homes. More than 600,000 have fled to neighboring states. Nearly 4.6 million, or 40% of the population, face acute hunger, particularly those living in the most conflict-affected areas of Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei states. Still, there is hope. In late August, the heads of the two warring parties signed a peace agreement that could bring an end to the fighting and set the country on a road to recovery. In view of this positive development, the United States has announced an additional $80 million in humanitarian assistance for the people of South Sudan, specifically aimed at helping South Sudanese refugees. This brings the total U.S. assistance since the start of the conflict to over $1.3 billion. The funding will aid those most in need, including internally displaced persons, refugees seeking asylum in South Sudan, and those South Sudanese who are living as refugees in neighboring nations. The United States urges all signatories of the peace agreement to uphold their obligations to the people of South Sudan and to allow immediate, full, and unconditional humanitarian access to all populations in need in all areas of South Sudan. They must also ensure the safety and security of civilians, humanitarian workers, and humanitarian supplies. There is a long road ahead, and this is the first step.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And as usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we're gladly joined by Dr. Sipho Moyo, a Zimbabwean woman who has just been appointed the Director of Cabinet and Chief of Staff in the Office of the President of the African Development Bank. Dr. Moyo graduated with a Master's in Development Economics in 1989 and a PhD in Financial Economics in 1994, both from Howard University in Washington, D.C. in the United States. She is currently the executive director of the One Campaign, an international civil society organization. Dr. Moyo will join the African Development Bank in November and says she hopes to mentor and uplift other women. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Dr. Moyo.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Dr. Moyo, how do you feel about your recent appointment?
Extremely excited. I'm excited about the work that the new president of the African Development Bank, Dr. Aki Nadeshina, is envisioning for the bank and for the continent. And it's such a great honor that he should ask me to come and work with him and really help to implement this vision for Africa. And, you know, for me, it's exciting because I always feel that my calling is primarily to the African continent. So being able to sort of continue, you know, with my passion from, you know, what is a bigger platform is extremely exciting for me. I'm particularly excited by sort of the five key areas of focus that Dr. Adishina has in mind.
What will the key focus areas be for you when you do join the Africa Development Bank?
Those are energy, development of energy or power. You know, that is the one thing that stands really between our people and prosperity and economic transformation. When you have access to energy is as low as it is in Africa, less than 20% of people have access to energy. It's very difficult to see how we can move forward without power. The other area of focus, obviously, is agriculture, which you're probably aware I have a great passion for, because 70% of our people rely on agriculture for their livelihood. So, you know, what better way to fight poverty than to start with the 70% who are also the same 70% who don't have power, who don't have clean water and sanitation, who don't have access to good health care services or education. The other area of focus is industrialization. And this, again, is the key to economic transformation. We're not going to transform African economies without industrialization. And industrialization is rooted in agriculture and natural resources, which Africa has an abundance of. So it's important that we develop those. And, of course, regional integration. Currently, Africa trades the least with itself. I think only 10 to 12% of Africa's trade is within Africa, and 70% is with Europe and North America. And we want to change that, help to, you know, create a more integrated continent. And that has to do a lot with infrastructure as well, especially in the transportation sector, roads, rail, airports, and so on. Last but not least, the issue of women and youth empowerment. That's critical. We're not, again, going to solve poverty and transform our economies by leaving behind women and youth. So that's a really important area. It's very difficult for me to sort of speak on behalf of the bank at this point, but I am excited about the vision. And if anyone listened to Dr. Adeshina's speech, it was really seminal at his inauguration. And that's where I'm sort of taking my 5 points from and just being really excited. So that's it, Marvelous.
Okay, so let me come in there, Dr. Moyo, and just say, how are you hoping to use this position to push for equal opportunities for women?
Having been picked for this position, I in turn have a responsibility to open doors and opportunities and mentor those who come, you know, behind us. And as it is, you know, I personally stand on the shoulders of giant African women who went before me and created opportunities and opened doors for me. And so it's important that we all continue to be the mentors for younger women. It's important for me to mention that one of those women on whose shoulders I stood at the very beginning of my career in development is Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, who is the former finance minister for Nigeria and has recently been appointed to chair the Gavi Alliance. There are many more women who really have, you know, created opportunities for us. But I did want to say, at the very beginning of my career, you know, she gave me my big break, without which I would not be here today.
And where will you be based?
I will be based in West Africa, Abidjan, the capital of Cote d'Ivoire.
And in conclusion, what word of advice would you have for some women out there who are wondering, can they do what you have done?
My word of advice is never be afraid of hard work. Just believe in what you're doing and, you know, really just, you know, have the passion lives of our people on the continent.
On that inspiring word, Dr. Sipho Moyo, thank you very much for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
Marvelous, thank you so much once again for having me on your show.
Join us again next week on the Women's Forum, where we look at other issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanganyo Huye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. Now to recap today's top stories. Political talks between President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party and several others have gripped Zimbabweans, as the leaking of such dialogue has been the norm over the years in Zimbabwe. And an organization fighting for the sexual rights of Zimbabweans says most women are still being culturally oppressed by men. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.